SmackDown was live tonight from Madison Square Garden, sold out Madison Square Garden right here in my backyard, New York City, and it felt like a big night, so I thought that what we would do tonight is we would have ourselves a good old-fashioned super stream, talking WWE SmackDown and talking AEW Rampage, which is normally what we do here on a Friday night. On SmackDown, we had Brock Lesnar being promoted for the show tonight, making a rare appearance to confront Roman Reigns and Paul Heyman. This was Lesnar's first appearance on television since SummerSlam. When he came back, he was gone for about a year and a half, ponytail and all. So we had Brock on the show tonight, plus Edge one-on-one against Seth Rollins in a rematch from what I thought was the best match on the entire SummerSlam card, Edge and Rollins 2. Over on Rampage, we finally got the match that was cut. It was bumped, not cut really, but it was moved off the All Out card last Sunday. It was supposed to be on the pay-per-view, and for what was deemed travel reasons, I assume involving PAC, the match did not take place. So instead, they taped it the other night for Rampage. And this would be the first real test for Andrade here in AEW. This is only his second television match. We saw Andrade one-on-one with Matt Sydal a few months ago. You know, the guy's been around now for about 3 months, and we have rarely had a chance to see him in the ring. So this was going to be his first real in-ring test against someone the caliber of Pac. I was looking forward to seeing what both men would be able to do in the ring together. Would this be the first breakout match of Andrade's career so far, his short career here in AEW? We're going to go through it all. First, hit that like button. If you would be so kind as to help the channel, and also hit the subscribe button, because I'm pretty sure tonight's the night that we are going to, with your help, break 65,000 subscribers here on the channel. You may be number 65K, so help get the channel to 65,000 if you are not a subscriber already. Super chats are open. I'll be reading each and every single one of your messages. No matter how long it might take, we'll have ourselves a little party a little bit later on. And I want to give a shout out to Ted Evans. Shout out to Ted for becoming a new channel member earlier today. Memberships are open as well. So why don't we start out with SmackDown, because that was the first show that I watched tonight. We'll go in order here. And frankly, I have to say, while I don't want to really compare the two shows, I almost can't help it because we got two distinctly different wrestling shows tonight. SmackDown kicked ass. SmackDown, not only was SmackDown the better show tonight, this was the best 2 hours of WWE television that they have produced all year long. If only they can do this on a more consistent basis. That's what's so maddening about it. But being in New York City tonight, here on the eve of the 20th anniversary of 9/11, this was a crowd that wanted to, I think, be entertained. And it sounded from their reactions tonight and from hearing from people in the building, because I had some friends who were at the show. In fact, there was an invite that was extended to me. And a shout out to DeAndre in the chat. I had an invitation extended to me to be at the show tonight, but I had to be here with you guys. It did sound like the garden was rocking tonight. So let's start with SmackDown. If only they could bring the Madison Square Garden crowd with them everywhere they go, every single week. If they could just bottle it all up, take it on the road with them, like a drug. Before they went on the air, Charlotte Flair beat Rhea Ripley with the figure eight by submission right in the middle of the ring, clean as a whistle. Because they had some raw talent in the building tonight. I believe when they went off the air, they were promoting a match, Drew McIntyre one-on-one against Happy Corbin. John Cena was not on the show tonight, but he was being promoted for SmackDown. That's going to be his last appearance for who knows how long. So if you're in the building tonight at MSG, you get John Cena. What we got when the show opened was a nice tribute here on the 20th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks, which is coming up tomorrow. And I'm going to be talking about that for people who have asked. Yeah, I'll be talking about that on the Sunday show, giving my thoughts on that. I thought maybe they would honestly open the show tonight with Lillian Garcia. Kind of a throwback to that first SmackDown they did a couple of days after the attacks, have her open the show tonight, singing the national anthem. I don't know if they didn't extend the invite. I don't know if they, maybe she was there and then it was off the air. I don't know, but I kind of thought, all right, maybe Lily it'll be in the garden tonight and she'll, you know, stand in the middle of the ring and sing the anthem like old times, but they didn't do that. I did, by the way, see the WWE documentary called Never Forget. It's their 9/11 documentary about running that SmackDown show a couple of days after the attacks. It's only about 30 minutes long, a little over 30 minutes. I'll talk about that on Sunday's podcast as well. But it is a good watch. It is well made. So if you are wondering, should I watch it or not, it's a quick watch. I think it's worth watching, but I'll give my thoughts on all that on episode 721. We got to save some stuff, right, for the weekend. Come on, we got to save some stuff for the Sunday show. I got a lot to get to on the Sunday show. You guys are going to want to tune into that. But the Bloodline was out first. We had Roman Reigns, the Usos, and Paul Heyman. Oh, Mo in the chat says Lillian sang tonight. All right, well, there you go. I was wondering if it was off the air. I'm surprised they didn't put that on the air. I'm surprised that didn't open the show tonight. I guess maybe time issues. But in any event, Bloodline was out first. And Roman Reigns said, when it comes to sports entertainment, WWE runs New York City. Which I'm sure was a not-so-subtle dig at another company that's going to be running New York City in a few weeks that's getting a lot of buzz. So he's kind of bringing things back down to earth a little bit. He asked Paul Heyman, who runs WWE? He says he does, which means Roman Reigns runs New York, which means he runs the Garden. And he wanted everybody to acknowledge him, which they did. The people cheered for Roman Reigns. They chanted Roman's name. They did acknowledge him, so he got exactly what he wanted here. I mean, it is New York City, so they pretty much do whatever they want. So Brock Lesnar's music hits, and here comes the Beast and his ponytail with his flannel vest. He had a flannel vest over a t-shirt. It's a very interesting wardrobe that Brock has for himself. But who's going to go and tell him that he should dress a certain way? It's not going to be me. You want to be the one to go tell him? He can dress however the fuck he wants to dress. And he'll still look like a badass. So he came out looking like a Viking lumberjack. And he gets in the ring and he takes the microphone. And he... Well, actually, before he takes the mic, I'm getting ahead of myself here. Before Lesnar takes the microphone, Paul Heyman has a question for Brock. And he wants to know from Brock, you know, why, of all the championships that you could go after, of all the championships that we could go after, why would you go after the Universal Championship? And Lesnar grabs his hand, so he has possession of the microphone. He goes, I got a question for you, Paul. Why didn't you tell Roman that I was going to be at SummerSlam? That got a big reaction from the crowd, and Heyman didn't quite know how to react to this. He had this almost shocked look on his face. Fox, by the way, was muting this show, especially in the opening segment, mainly in the opening. They were muting this segment off and on like crazy. When Brock said that, the crowd started to chant, "You fucked up," at Heyman. And at least here in New York, and apparently it was different in certain markets. So I saw online, I heard from people who live in the UK on BT Sport. They said there was no muting. There was somebody in Australia who said, nope, no muting. So it might have just been a Fox thing here in this country. But they muted the audio for like 30 seconds straight. It was long enough that I kind of had a look and say, wait a minute, did I, you know, hit a button by accident? Did I mute my feed? The fuck is going on here? 30 seconds, or at least it felt like 30 seconds, straight. They muted this crowd. They did not want that getting on the air. Fox of all channels. Like it's such a big deal. Please. I guess New York is too naughty for Fox. I thought nothing was too naughty for Fox, but apparently not. So Heyman insisted to Roman Reigns that he didn't know, because Roman, the first thing he did was he looked at Heyman and said, what's going on? You know, he was not happy about what he just heard. And Heyman is trying to insist, I didn't know, and Roman did not look convinced, and he grabbed the championship away from Paul, and he and the Usos left Heyman all alone in the ring with Brock Lesnar. And I laughed because as Heyman now is in the ring all by himself, it's like a switch got flipped. And immediately, he launches back into his advocate character. And he says, ladies and gentlemen, I am the advocate. You know, for 20 years, I was the advocate for the reigning, defending, undisputed WWE heavyweight champion of the world, Brock Lesnar. Right? And everyone cheers. Lesnar's having a blast. He loves it. He got a big smile on his face. He starts clapping. Brock takes the mic and says, Paul, that was great. It was just like old times. He goes, before Roman Reigns fires you, I want you to first accept my challenge. And Paul's like, what are you talking about? Like, what challenge are you talking about? And he says, my shot at Roman Reigns and the Universal title. And he says he's going to count to five. He wants an answer from Paul. Puts his hand in the air and he's counting down 5, 4, 3. And when he gets down to 2, he hoists Heyman, which is no easy feat. He hoists Heyman, looked like he almost dropped him, up onto his shoulder, on his shoulders. I'm sure Paul was having flashbacks to 2003. Night after night at the tapings, he would have to take the F5 from Brock Lesnar. He and Big Show both have told those stories about having to take the F5 every night, how banged up they were. So, and now Heyman is how many years? Almost 20 years older than he was back then. It's hard to believe. So he hoists him onto his shoulders for the F5. But before he could hit it, Roman's back in the ring, and he gives Lesnar a Superman punch, and he drops Heyman, so Heyman ends up getting dropped anyway. So Reigns goes for another one. Lesnar catches him on his shoulders for an F5. But now the Usos are back in the ring. They give stereo super kicks to Brock. Brock then turns around and double clotheslines both of them. The place is going nuts for all this. He's giving German suplexes to Jimmy. He's giving German suplexes to Jay. He's taking them to Suplex City here. And the people are eating this up. They are eating this up. So the bloodline retreats with Heyman, and Lesnar rips off his flannel vest. Babyface Brock was over like Rover here in Madison Square Garden on this show. This was a hot opening segment. This got over very big in front of this crowd. I thought this was all very well done. This is why I said, you know, when Brock came back at SummerSlam, and I know not everybody is excited to see Brock Lesnar. Oh, it's Brock again, you know. They're kind of tired of him after all these years. But I said, you know, I was excited to see Lesnar back, even though it's a match that we've seen before. How many times have we seen Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns, right? At least half a dozen times, including a couple of WrestleManias and a Saudi show and you know, some other shows, right? Weren't they also in that Fatal 4-Way at SummerSlam a few years ago, which was an excellent match? So it's not a fresh match that we've seen with these two in the ring, but it is fresh in that every single iteration of this match that we have seen, forget what the fans' reactions were, because the fans were booing Roman, even though he was booked like a babyface. But now Roman is a heel, and Brock Lesnar is a babyface. These are the proper roles for them that they're programmed in at the moment, and that alone makes it unique. You throw in the drama of the Paul Heyman stuff, right? Where does Heyman stand? Where does his allegiance lie? Is it with Brock? It looks like it's with Roman Reigns. Maybe it's not. Maybe this is the slow burn and the slow build to what eventually is Heyman and Lesnar reuniting together again. To me, it almost doesn't even feel right for the two of them not to be together. So there's still the intrigue in that. Where is that going to sort of settle? I thought this opening segment, though, was fantastic. And when Brock goes away, when anybody goes away, right? They say absence makes the heart grow fonder. Brock has been gone long enough. We're now having him back like this, and him even just changing his appearance and just acting and behaving a little bit differently. I mean, I think we heard more from him on the microphone tonight than we probably heard from him when he was a heel the entire year he was the fucking champion. He got more mic time on this show and was fine, too. He didn't sound awkward or anything like that. Remember that time on TV he was like, let's do this? You know, I mean, he's a little fucking awkward, this guy. Hey, Paul, say something stupid. Actually, that was a great line. But I loved it. I thought the opening segment was excellent. So they come back from break. And Kayla Braxton, who is a thorn in the side of Paul Heyman every single week. And I enjoyed it when they would interact with each other on Talking Smack and was very sad when they took Heyman off that show. Kayla Braxton tried to interview Roman and the Usos. They walked into their locker room without saying a word. And so Paul Heyman was left to deal with her all by himself. And he said, I don't know. I didn't know that Brock was going to be at SummerSlam, but he promised that before this night is over, when he is ready to do so, Roman Reigns will address Brock Lesnar's challenge when he is prepared to do so. And that was the end of that. So that led into a 10-man tag. We had Big E, Shinsuke Nakamura, Rick Boogs, Rey and Dominic Mysterio taking on Sami Zayn, Otis, Chad Gable, Dolph Ziggler, and Bobby Roode. Sami Zayn is great. Sami Zayn, for a night, was actually not dressed like Fidel Castro. Sami Zayn was in the ring, and he was wearing a New York Knicks jersey. He interrupted Nakamura's entrance, because he was already in the ring. He said, enough, cut the music. And he's wearing a Knicks jersey. I don't know what kind of pants he was wearing. It looked like maybe he had like a Big Apple on his, like a Big Apple design. It looked like he was wearing his fucking pajamas. And he's standing in the middle of the ring, and he goes, I love New York. And he goes, in fact, what I'd like to do right now is I'd like to introduce to you a man who knows how to win here in New York, a man who knows how to win in Madison Square Garden. And out comes Trey Young, the guard for the Atlanta Hawks, who is a villain here in New York after this past NBA season. The same Atlanta Hawks who bounced the Knicks out of the playoffs this year. He cemented himself as a villain after that series. And oh, what a fantastic asshole Sami Zayn was here in this segment. And what heat Trey Young got. There are wrestlers on that roster in that company who would die to get the kind of heat that not only Trey Young got tonight, but, and you could say it's cheap heat, it's market-specific heat. You know, he wouldn't get that kind of heat if they were in Boston, I don't think, or Chicago. But the kind of heat that he got tonight in the Garden, and even the kind of heat that Logan Paul, to his credit, the kind of heat that Logan Paul gets when he comes out on television. I mean, you know, these celebrities go out there, and you got wrestlers in the back going, man, I wish I could figure out a way to get people to hate me like that. They could learn a thing or two from these celebrities. But this got tremendous heel heat. And he stayed at ringside. Trey Young stood ringside in the corner of the heels. We had Nakamura rocking Sammy with a kick to the head. Rey got the hot tag and he hit a code red for an earfall. Everybody jumped in at this point. They all started, you know, we've seen this formula before where everybody gets in the ring and everybody starts hitting big moves in rapid fire succession, one right after the other. Rey then set up for the 619 on Roode, but Zayn tripped him and Trey Young. He got physical here. He reached up when the referee was distracted, and he starts choking Rey Mysterio. He's necking him across the rope. And the fans booed. Oh, did they boo? But the referee finally caught him, and the referee ejected him from ringside to a big pop. Rey and Dominic then hit a double 619 on Sammy. Big E hit the big ending for the win. When the match was over, Kayla Braxton got in the ring, and nobody was happier than Paul Heyman to finally get rid of this woman. She got in the ring to interview Big E, and he held up his Money in the Bank briefcase, and he said that tonight might not be the last time you guys see me, teasing that potentially he might cash in his Money in the Bank. He said, doesn't matter if it's the almighty Bobby Lashley, it doesn't matter if it's the tribal chief Roman Reigns, he's coming. It could be either one of them. He could show up on Raw. Or he could stay right here on SmackDown and he can go after Roman Reigns. Name drop, for the record, name dropping Roman Reigns got the bigger reaction. Because Roman is a bigger star than Bobby Lashley. But that is clearly who the people wanted. And it could just be that, you know, they were hoping for a cash-in tonight. So, of course, they were going to cheer louder for the champion who's actually in the building tonight. But they want you to know. They want to keep reminding you that Big E is waiting in the wings with this briefcase. So then it was time for the contract signing. Good evening, Zoeel. I hope I'm probably butchering your name right now, but we got Zoeel joining us in the chat right now. What's going on? This is, by the way, for those who are just filing on in, a double stream. We are going to talk about AEW Rampage as we normally do. We're going to get to that here in a few minutes, but this was a big SmackDown tonight from MSG, so I said, let's do a double stream for a change. And we had a contract signing for Extreme Rules with Bianca Belair and the SmackDown Women's Champion, Becky Lynch. Adam Pearce and Sonya Deville were in the ring to oversee the signing. Bianca was out first. He got a big reaction. So Pearce handed her the contract, and Bianca said, you know, I was excited to be in the ring with Becky Lynch at SummerSlam. It was exciting when she came out, made her return. She said she never thought that Becky would run from a fight, but my oh my, how things have changed. She said that she doesn't respect her as much as she used to. She said that Becky could win back some of that respect at Extreme Rules when she wins back her championship. And then Bianca signed the contract. Out comes Becky Lynch wearing this oversized red fur coat and these big-ass sunglasses. She took a seat. She said the original WrestleMania main eventer has arrived, and she got cheered. She accused Bianca of being starstruck by her at Summer. That's why she lost. She was starstruck by her mere presence at SummerSlam. And she was wondering, what would happen if I just simply decided not to sign the contract? I was actually wondering that myself. What if Becky just said, nah, you know what? I'm not going to sign the contract. What are they going to do? Going to strip her of the title? I guess so. But Bianca told her, just sign the damn contract. Becky, and now the people are chanting, sign it, right? Because she kept chanting over and over. Bianca's like, sign it, sign it, sign it. And so the fans started chanting, sign it, sign it, sign it. That was Vince McMahon at his meeting with Adam Cole. Sign it, sign it, sign it. That's when he hit the bricks. So Becky said, you know, I remember sitting at home, listening to fans chant, we want Becky, which they were doing during Charlotte's matches, right? Remember that? And then she comes back at the last minute. She wins the championship in 26 seconds. And this is how you treat her? This is how you treat me? She says, I left my baby girl at home for you people, and now you're choosing a flash in the pan over me. So they're really trying. They're trying. They're going to the playbook to try to get her over as a heel. She said that she would give Bianca her match, but it would end the same way it did the first time. And with that, Becky signed the contract. She tossed it at Bianca, who caught it. And that was the segment. So Becky is out there now. Apparently, the way she was dressed tonight, she's out there trying to be Conor McGregor. That's what she was going for. She's trying to be the female Conor McGregor. She got more heat in this segment than she has over the past few weeks. I mean, this was a hot crowd tonight, so I'm not surprised that they were as loud, but she got more heat than she's been getting on TV. I still don't think people want to boo this woman. I don't think they want to boo her. But the good news is that the people are still behind Bianca, which is why, you know, and I was not one of those people who said, for as much as I hated that finish and I thought there was a lot that was wrong with what they did at SummerSlam, especially the false advertising of Sasha Banks, who was still missing, by the way. Supposedly, she was backstage. At least I believe I read that on PW Insider, but she was not on the show tonight. But I was not one of those people after SummerSlam, even in my review, oh, Bianca is buried. Bianca is buried. I knew Bianca was going to be okay. And so it's good to see her still going out there and getting big reactions. It doesn't change how I felt about what they did at SummerSlam, but it doesn't change how I feel that I think Becky Lynch, it's going to be an uphill climb for her. Tonight, they got more of the desired reaction. I still think it's going to be a struggle for them to really get her over as a heel. But they're trying. For tonight, though, they had a hot crowd that was pretty much into everything. So this segment accomplished what they were looking to do. We had Edge one-on-one in a rematch from SummerSlam against Seth Rollins. We were told this was Edge's first match in Madison Square Garden in more than 4,000 days. It's been a while. It's been a minute since Edge has had a match in the Garden. So these two had the match of the night at SummerSlam last month. I was looking forward to this match the way that I was looking forward to Pac and Andrade on Rampage. I knew that no matter what else we got, we were at least guaranteed to have two really good matches on TV tonight. So Edge sent Rollins shoulder first into the ring post. Rollins dragged Edge out of the ring, threw him into the barricade. Edge fought back. He went for a spear off the apron, but Rollins delivered a knee strike. And Rollins sent Edge back to the floor. He hit a suicide dive. They went into a break. They dove into a break. During the break, I have to mention this. During the break, they ran an ad for Monday Night Raw, hyping a WWE Championship match with Bobby Lashley defending against Randy Orton. I thought to myself, well, that's strange, because I could have sworn that when I watched Raw on Monday night, this was a match that they announced already for Extreme Rules. And not only did they announce this as the championship match at the pay-per-view later this month, but we were told that the winners of that tag team gauntlet, which were Bobby Lashley and MVP, would be challenging Orton and Matt Riddle for the Raw tag team titles on Raw this coming Monday night. Hey, Majin, thank you for subscribing to the channel. He might be number 65K. I don't know where we're at, but thank you for the sub. So we were supposed to get a tag team title match this Monday. So apparently everything now has been flipped. We're getting a championship match for the WWE title on Raw this coming Monday night. So I don't know what the fuck is going on. Apparently neither does WWE. My guess here is that someone finally realized, oh shit, we forgot. Monday Night Football begins this Monday, which is like the bane of their existence. I'm sure WWE is just excited as all hell that Monday Night Football is back. Hey, Rada, thank you for the sub. Is that double thumbs up from Asuka? So someone realized that, oh shit, Monday Night Football is back. So they decided to go ahead and move the championship match up to TV this week. They figured, oh, let's go swap things quick. I don't know why they didn't realize this earlier in the week. It's not like we didn't know that Monday Night Football was coming back this Monday, but it's like WWE, somebody had a brain fart and they finally realized. So that was strange. So back from break, Rollins hit a springboard knee for a near fall, slowed things down a little bit. He started working over Edge's arm. Rollins followed up with a terrible looking glam slam. He was going for a glam slam, which of course is Beth Phoenix's move, Edge's wife. And he either just didn't get him up well for it, or maybe it was Edge just fell forward too soon, but he immediately dropped Edge. And it looked terrible, so he picked him up. If at first you don't succeed, try again, which is what he did. He picked him up. This time he hit the glam slam. Edge went for the DDT, Rollins escaped, Rollins went for the pedigree, Edge escaped, and Edge hit a pedigree for a near fall. I don't know if they worked that in there as a little tribute to Triple H, who was convalescing after a cardiac event. I'm not sure, actually, if he's still in the hospital or not. I know we haven't seen any photos of him, so hopefully he's doing well. They claim he's doing well, but, you know, I would expect them to say that anyway. Hey, Joseph, thank you for the sub. That's three. We might have already broken 65K, thanks to you guys. So Edge followed that with a crossbody off the top rope down to the floor. That was heading into the second break of the match. Later on, Edge escaped a crossface, applied one of his own to Rollins, the choke. That was the move that he used to beat Seth Rollins at SummerSlam, and the announcers were playing that up, that he might win with it again. Rollins got out of it. Edge hit his execution DDT. And Ricky Edmund, thank you for the sub. Edge went for a spear. Rollins countered into a neck breaker. Rollins charged in for the curb stomp, but Edge caught him and picked him up, hit a sit-out powerbomb for a near fall. Rollins powered Edge up. He delivered a buckle bomb. And Rollins then hit the ropes for the stomp, but Edge speared him before he had a chance to hit the move. Edge speared him and covered him for a very close near fall. Edge then maneuvers Rollins into the corner, or pushes him into the corner where the referee is. The referee for the match is one of the female referees, Jessica Carr. So now she's in the corner trying not to be squashed in between these guys. She manages to slip out. As the referee is slipping out of the corner to safety, she does not see Seth Rollins kick Edge low. He kicks him in the balls. And the referee did not see it. Rollins then kicks Edge in the knee. Super kicks him. Edge falls down to his knees. Rollins leans down. He's glaring at him. And Edge is staring back up at him. And Rollins super kicks Edge again. And again, he waits for Edge to sit up. And Edge sits up again. He's on his knees. And Rollins again delivers a super kick. So now Edge has this just glazed over look in his eyes. Like the lights are on, but nobody's home. And Rollins is screaming at him, "Why won't you die? Why won't you?" I'm surprised Fox didn't mute that too. They're so sensitive. "Why won't you die?" Rollins delivers another super kick. Finally, he hits a curb stomp. Slowly drops down to the mat. He covers Edge. He gets the 1-2-3. Seth Rollins gets his win back here. Edge won one at SummerSlam. Rollins picks up the win here on SmackDown. Another excellent outing between these two. I thought this match was every bit as good as their match at SummerSlam. And it was long, too. They gave them a lot of time. They gave them just shy of 25 minutes. And so that evens things out. One win apiece between them. After it was over, the announcers were acting all solemn. You know, they were talking, and Michael Cole was talking about Edge's history of neck issues and his neck surgery. And they rushed a stretcher out to the ring to take him to the back and load him up into an ambulance. So depending on how long Edge is going to be out for with this storyline injury, they could do the third match at Extreme Rules, or they could wait. And they could save it for Sweet Saudi Money 6, which is only about 5 weeks away. They might want to wait and hold out for that show. But I will say that if that third match is anything like the first two matches that these two guys have had, if you're not watching WWE anymore, or you're not watching WWE as consistently, perhaps, as you used to, make sure you check that match out, because these two matches, the first matches here they've had, have been great. I actually would give that match the edge. No pun intended. I swear to God, I didn't plan that. But I would give that match the edge over the Pac Andrade match on Rampage. And I think part of it, to be honest with you, and this is not Pac and Andrade's fault, you got to take everything into account. They had a hot crowd for Edge and Rollins. The crowd on Rampage was hindered because they taped Rampage after Dynamite. You could tell that the crowd was pretty burned out by that point. They weren't really overly loud for anything on that show. So I thought that kind of brought things down a little bit. But again, this was an excellent match. Which brings us to the Tag Team Championship. The SmackDown Tag Team titles were defended tonight. It was the Usos defending their titles against the Street Profits. Jimmy Uso immediately kicked Montez Ford off the apron, hit a suicide dive before the break. This is 30 seconds, if that, into the match. He hits a dive, and we go to break. And before I move on here, I just have to, because everybody in the chat is telling me that we have officially broken 65,000 subs here on YouTube. And let me see if I can bring up some confetti on this. There we go. Look at that. That's a celebration, everybody. It got some confetti on screen. It's like New Year's Eve. Thank you, guys. I really appreciate that. So we come back from break. Street Profits are in control. Usos, they briefly got Angelo Dawkins isolated in the corner. Dawkins fights back. Ford then comes in. And Montez Ford hits this gigantic cannonball dive out over the top onto both Usos. Out comes Roman Reigns and Paul Heyman. They walk out to stand in the aisle where they want to get a closer look. And they go right into another commercial. It felt like they were only back for maybe 60 seconds before they went to another commercial. So back from that break, Jey Uso goes for a Samoan drop. Dawkins counters with a twisting neckbreaker. Montez Ford hit a flying crossbody on Jimmy for a near fall. and he rocked Jay with a super kick, and in doing so, he lost his shoe. He super kicked his shoe off. And Montez, he picks up the shoe, he throws it up into the air, hits a blockbuster on Jimmy for a near fall. Fans started a one shoe chant. Montez hit the blockbuster on Jimmy then off of Dawkins' shoulders for a close near fall. Jimmy caught Dawkins with a super kick. Jay caught Angelo with another super kick. And Jimmy followed up with a... Boy, this was a fucking super kick party here. Jay goes up top. He hits the Uso splash for a very close two count. Street Profits, though, they fought back. And Montez Ford hit the frog splash. It will never not be impressive to see Montez Ford hitting that frog splash. It's one of the most beautiful moves in all of wrestling, is the Montez Ford frog splash. Not just the height that he gets on it, but the way that he can completely twist his body in midair is very impressive. You know, I made a comment, this was probably a year and a half ago, I think it was, maybe 2 years ago, on the podcast. And I said that I thought at some point in the future, Montez Ford and Bianca Belair, as likable as they are as baby faces, I see the two of them being money together as a heel combo on TV. And I still feel that way. I think when the time comes, and it could be years from now, but when the time comes for Montez Ford to break out on his own, and he will, he's going to be a big star as a single. I would link him and Bianca up as a heel combo, man. I'm telling you, license to print money. Whatever that even means in 2021 or 22 or whenever they actually do it. But together, I think that's a winning combination. But we're not there yet. So he hits the frog splash off the top rope. And they had the match won. Roman Reigns, though, he has seen enough. He jumps into the ring. He locks the guillotine on Montez Ford for the disqualification. So we had a cheap finish to what otherwise I thought was a really good match. Reigns puts him out, and he grabs the microphone. And Roman Reigns says that he accepts Brock Lesnar's challenge. He promised to smash Lesnar after he smashes Finn Balor. By the way, he should probably use a different word, because that could have a lot of different meanings, I think. So, he's going to smash Finn Balor at Extreme Rules. And right, almost as if it were on cue, after he mentions Finn Balor's name, the lights go out, and Finn Balor shows up in his demon paint to a huge pop in Madison Square Garden. Everything was painted, not just his face, his chest, like, all black. He's got like a goatee now. He looks even more, I guess evil. That's the look he's going for. He was, he's got that mean look on his face and everything. I know some people look at the demon and they laugh. They're like, what the fuck is this? It's just Finn Balor in paint. He's still the same Finn Balor. He's still a small guy. Roman Reigns is, bigger than he is. So what's the big deal? Well, the announcers tried to explain it. Basically, and I didn't write down exactly what Michael Cole said, but I got a fucking thing flying around here. But what he said basically in so many words was, this is his alter ego. The demon is his alter ego. And basically, it comes out when he's in a bad mood, is basically what he was saying. And I thought, you know what? That's a very simplistic explanation, but I can go with that. We'll go with that. When he is in it's like the Hulk, right? It's like Bruce Banner. You make him mad, he becomes the Incredible Hulk. When Finn Balor is on a losing streak, or he's being screwed over, as he was, right, in the last match with Roman when he got low-blowed, out comes the demon. We haven't seen the demon in a very long time. I don't know exactly when the last time was, actually, that we would have seen. It's probably been on the main roster, because we didn't see it at all in his return to NXT, which I actually liked. When he came back to NXT, Finn Balor was all business. There was no demon stuff. He didn't have to bust out the paint as a gimmick. He was killing it. He was having great matches. He wrestled this kind of stiff style in your face, had this attitude, this chip on his shoulder. I mean, frankly, I think that's really all you need from Finn Balor. You could just take that exact character and transplant that on the main roster, which is what they were doing. Now they're going to bring the Demon back at least for one match. He's going to lose. That probably will be the first time the Demon loses on the main roster. I know he lost to Samoa Joe once in NXT. But the people in the building went nuts for it. And he confronted Roman and the Usos in the ring, and he stared them down, and that was how they went off the air. So, according to John Pollock, Zelina Vega and Carmella were scheduled for a tag team match on this show against Liv Morgan and Toni Storm. It was cut due to time constraints. And I knew something was up. I figured that was the case because Carmella went on Twitter and she posted three dots without giving any kind of context. Zelina went on Twitter. She posted a photo, a caption that said, well, never mind. And it was pictures of her backstage. She was all dressed up in her gear as if she were ready to go out for a match. She was backstage at Madison Square Garden. And you know that would have been important to her. I mean, you know, we see what's been going on with Zelina Vega since she came back. I mean, she's basically been booked like a loser on TV. But being in New York, which is where she's from New York. Being in New York, this being, you know, the eve of the anniversary of the 9/11 attacks, 20 years later, she lost her father in the attacks that day. And she's spoken about this before. She talked about it even when she was in Impact. I remember that, you know, she opened up about that whole experience. So I can understand her being upset. If she was supposed to be on the show tonight and her match got cut, of all the nights, of all the places for this show to be, it would have been, I'm sure, very special for her. Maybe there was family there that expected her to be on the show. That's pretty shitty. I mean, they didn't do it to her on purpose, but I can understand her being upset by that. But there were no women's matches on the show tonight. Even still, I thought this was the best 2 hours of television the WWE has produced all year long. And as fun as I thought the show was tonight, as fun and as great as it was to hear the crowd loud and into everything, and we got a great match with Edge and Rollins, and even the tag team match until the finish, I thought was very enjoyable. As fun as this show was tonight, it was also one of the most frustrating shows I've watched all year from WWE. And it was frustrating because you watch a show like this and it just proves. It proves that when they want to, they have the talent, they have the ability to do so. They have the means to do so, the tools are all there. They have everything they need to produce great television like this every single week. Yes, not every week you're going to get a hot crowd like Madison Square Garden, but even still, you could put on great television like this on a consistent basis, and they just don't do it. How many hours of television, and it's a lot of it is Raw, although not every SmackDown is a winner. SmackDown is clearly, of the two, the SmackDown is clearly the A-show. There could be no debate about that. I mean, if you are someone who says that Raw is the A-show, Raw is the flagship, no, it's not. No, it's not. You're a fucking idiot if you believe that. Raw is not the A-show. It hasn't been for a very long time. So we can all admit that. But the tools are there for them to put on shows like this on a more consistent basis, and they don't do it. And that's what I find so aggravating, and that's what I find so infuriating. And that's why everybody has been talking about AEW, and very few people have been talking about WWE. You put on more shows like this, you might be able to change that. Do I have faith in them doing that? No. But for one night, I thought that this was a very enjoyable show. And I'm glad that of all the nights to do one of these double streams and double reviews, that this was the night to do it. I thought, you know, it's the Garden, right? They're gonna, you know, they're loading it up with Brock's gonna be there. They got, you know, a big match announced a week in advance with Edge and Rollins. And I love their match at SummerSlam. So I knew going into this show, it just felt to me that this was not going to be your average WWE show. And I'm glad I watched it live, and I'm glad that we're reviewing it and talking about it here tonight. So now we flip over. You want to see magic? Watch this. Boom! There you go. Look at that. Perfect. We now switch over to AEW Rampage. We now resume our normal review, as we do every Friday night here on this channel. That was SmackDown, now we talk AEW Rampage. Which was, in fact, taped on Wednesday night from Cincinnati. This was not one of the live weeks of Rampage. We kicked off, though, immediately. They didn't waste any time. They kicked off immediately with Andrade El Idolo and Pac in the middle of the ring with Justin Roberts doing the ring introductions. So no televised entrance for either man. This is the match that was bumped from the all-out card. Yes, Temjin, I am in fact Thanos, and I don't need some stupid glove either. I just snap my fingers and boom, just like magic. Jim Ross was on commentary this week with Tony Schiavone, with Taz, and with Mark Henry. I actually enjoyed the commentary this week. Taz and Tony, they work well together. Excalibur is away. He's getting married. That's why he wasn't on TV this week. Chris Jericho wasn't there. So we were coming up aces here all around, right? We were coming up aces on the show. So Andrade goes out to the floor early, and Pac caught him with a tope con hilo. Pac whipped him into the barricade, and for a brief moment, Andrade broke kayfabe. Because the railings they use are the more traditional railings that you used to see WWE use, and a lot of wrestling promotions use. WWE for the last, it might have been close to two decades. They've been using them for a while. They've been using those really thick black barricades. And so that is going to afford more protection for the people who are in the front row. Tonight is a great example of that. When you have those flimsy looking railings and a guy is going, he's being launched into it. What happened is he basically hit, there was a little kid, I think it was a little girl in the front row. And you could tell he was very concerned. And he didn't sell the move. He just looked over at the kid. He was apologizing. He wanted to make sure the kid was okay. So deep down, Andrade was, he was a good guy here on this show. We saw good guy Andrade here for a few seconds. There was a spot where Pac was hung up on the top rope by one of his legs, and Andrade hit a double stomp off the top, and he landed hard on his ass on the floor. That didn't look like fun. A few minutes later, he hit a springboard moonsault, which is the RVD split-legged moonsault, off the top rope for a two count. Andrade positioned Pac on the middle rope. He was setting up for an electric chair off the ropes. Pac, though, countered it into a super rana. Pac went for a sunset flip powerbomb to the floor. Andrade flipped out of it, landed on his feet, and Pac caught him with a super kick, wound up, hung up on the top rope by his legs, yet again. Andrade went for another double stomp off the top, but this time, Pac avoided it, and he hit a top rope moonsault down to the floor. Smacked the back of his head against that railing, too. But he hit a picture-perfect moonsault down to the floor. So Pac throws Andrade back into the ring. He comes off the top with a 450 splash. And Pac goes for the cover. Andrade is close enough to the ropes, though. He reaches for it. He gets a rope break. Pac hits a Pele kick. Went for the hammerlock DDT finish. Andrade does, I should say. Pac then gets out of it. Hits a German suplex. Pac goes for a springboard, but Andrade caught him in a fireman's carry. Pac countered out of that into his brutalizer's submission. And at that point, Andrade's assistant, what is the guy's name? I think they've mentioned it before. I didn't get the guy's name. Who gives a fuck what his name is? He's the assistant. He is the assistant that comes out with Chavo and Andrade for his match. His two matches that we've seen him have on TV. The assistant jumps up on the apron with a fucking taser. As soon as I heard the noise, I knew what it was. And I was getting flashbacks to fucking Starrcade with Scott Hall. Here, these two guys were having a pretty good wrestling match. And now we got some guy in the apron with a fucking taser in his hand. So that distracts the referee. Lucha Bros ran down, pulled him off the apron. While the referee is distracted, we see Chavo Guerrero crawl into the ring behind the referee's back, and he waffled Pac with his iPad, and Andrade covered Pac for the win. Jose. Okay, I'm being told that Jose is the guy's name. If that was the finish they had planned for the pay-per-view, then you know what? It's better it got left off. Because that finish sucked. Now, it served a purpose for what was coming up. I will say, it did serve a purpose for what was coming up next, but it sucked. After the match, Jose told Andrade what Chavo did. He snitched. Snitches get stitches. Apparently, Jose was never taught this as a young man. So he snitched out Chavo. Andrade punched Chavo in the aisleway, punched him right in the face. And that left him for the Lucha Bros, who hit double super kicks. They threw Chavo into the ring for Pac to lock on the Brutalizer. Andrade has already turned on Chavo Guerrero. This man has been in this company for 3 whole months, and he has already been through 2 managers in 3 months. And we were told why by Taz on commentary, who said that it was because Andrade did not want to win the match that way. That was their way of explaining it. So that's now 2 managers he's lost in the span of 3 months. And it makes me wonder, and I'm sure I'm not the only one, but it makes me wonder, are they paving the way for him to get a 3rd manager, not counting Jose, all due respect to him? Are they bringing in Ric Flair? Is Ric Flair going to be the new manager for Andrade like he was in that one match in Mexico when Andrade wrestled Kenny Omega for AAA? Are we going to see Ric Flair, much like Arn Anderson, much like Tully Blanchard? We already have 2 horsemen in this company who are in the managerial role. We know that Ric Flair and Tony Khan are fast friends, and we know that Ric Flair is no longer under contract to WWE. And I'm sure he would love to be involved. So it makes me wonder if they're setting up for him to be the new manager for Andrade. I thought the match itself was very good. It still felt a little flat to me. As good as the match was, it felt flat. It was not as hot of a match as I was expecting. But that finish would be a great excuse to run it back one more time. I certainly would not complain if they wanted to do it. And I would do it this time, preferably on a live show in front of a crowd that is more alive and awake than these poor people were at the very end of the taping. Maybe that'll help the next time. So I'm hoping they run this match back one more time. Tony Schiavone was in the ring to interview Sting and Darby Allin. JD Starlord in the chat says this man is going through more managers than the New York Mets. Hey now, you watch your tongue there. Not that you're wrong. Look at this. Antox says, unlike the Mets, Andrade, well, what is all this picking on the Mets? Only I can pick on the Mets. Unless you're in New York, you have no right to pick on the Mets. The Mets are like that little brother, right? It's okay for me to beat up the little brother, but if somebody else messes with my brother, you're going to be getting these fucking knuckles is what you're going to be getting. That's how I feel about the Mets. It's a love-hate relationship. So unless you're in New York, you better watch yourself here. I don't like what I'm hearing. Tony Schiavone was in the ring to interview Sting and Darby Allin. And Darby called Sean Spears a generic piece of shit. He called Sean Spears a generic piece of shit. Wow. Hitting a little too close to home, I think, huh? He said, without Tully Blanchard, he's absolutely nothing. Boy, he was really dry. He was shooting is what he was doing. Darby Allin was cutting a shoot promo here in this ring. So Sting took the microphone out of Schiavone's hand. Et tu, Sting. Et tu. Not you two. Stealing the microphone from Tony Schiavone. He talked about Tully riding Ric Flair and Arn Anderson's coattails for all those years in the Horsemen. If he wants to go mano a mano, why not just do it tonight right here in Cincinnati? Out comes Tully Blanchard, who says, ah, yeah, you guys would love that, huh? 2-on-1 here, right? I'm sure you two guys would love it if I came down to that ring and you had the man advantage. As he was speaking, Sean Spears snuck into the ring. He dragged Darby out to the floor, put him up on his shoulders, and he dumped him with a C4, which is his move. Dropped him with a C4 on the ground. Sting noticed this. He goes outside to check on Darby. Sean Spears already ran off into the crowd. And on the microphone, Tully is crowing about how this was all part of our plan. It all worked. Mwahaha. It's like, this is like something out of a fucking cartoon here. You fell into our trap. This was a weird segment. I don't know. This felt like it was just shoehorned into the show, is what it felt like to me. Again, I said this on Wednesday. Sting and Tully. I don't know. Maybe this is a way to introduce Flair. We're talking about Flair maybe is coming in as a manager for Andrade, but you know, if they're going to be doing Sting and Tully Would that not be a way to get Flair in there somehow for some kind of cameo, whether he gets involved in the match? You know, maybe. I mean, we had Darby in this segment say, hey, Tully, you've been riding the coattails of Rick and Arn, right? You used to ride their coattails. So maybe we'll get a Ric Flair cameo here. Either way, whether it's this segment, whether it's, you know, in the eventual match that obviously Sting and Tully are going to have, whether it's that, whether it's Andrade, it sure looks to me like Ric Flair's coming into AEW. They cut to a pre-taped interview with Adam Cole, who said that he's not even in his prime yet, and he's going to mop the floor with Bryan Danielson. They cut to an interview with Bryan Danielson, who said that he's not going after all of the Elite. He's only interested in going after one of them, that being Kenny Omega. And if Kenny Omega doesn't want a piece of him, then it'll be somebody else, because he just wants to get in the ring and wrestle. What a concept. This guy just wants to get into the ring and wrestle because he is a wrestler. And as he said off the air at All Out, he just wants to fucking wrestle. The American Dragon is back. And if it's not Kenny Omega, then it'll be Adam Cole. If it's not Adam Cole, it'll be somebody else. I'm sure at some point we'll see him in the ring with all of them. And I can't wait to see it. I want to see every single one of those matches. Bring it on. Not much to these segments. This felt like a way to advertise that Adam Cole's going to be on the show, everybody. Bryan Danielson's going to be on the show, everybody. And then, you know, you get 30 seconds of a promo package. I mean, yeah, we got comments from both guys, but that's what this was. This was a way for them to advertise that these two would be on the show without them really having any particular need to be on the show. We had Britt Baker, Rebel, and Jamie Hayter against Ruby Soho, Riho, and Chris Statlander in a trios match, which Jim Ross, you know, he called it a six-person tag, and then he said, or a trios match, as it's called. When he said that, you could hear the disgust in his voice over having to call it a trios match. I don't mind calling it a trios match, actually. I almost prefer it, frankly. Sometimes the women are out there and I call it a six-man tag and then I catch myself, so I have to go six-person tag. Trios is a lot easier. It's a trios match. Everybody knows what that is, right? Trio, three-on-three. So I don't mind it, but I don't know. He sounded a little disgusted when he said that. So Baker and Riho started out. Statlander got the quick tag. Statlander got a near fall after a power slam. Riho and Hayter got tags and they were in. And Rebel then, as Riho was hitting the ropes, Rebel hit her in the back with her knee. And they were working over Riho as they headed into the break. Back from break, Riho got the hot tag to Ruby. And Ruby got some kicks and a back sweeper for a two count. Statlander tagged in. And both of them went for a double arm drag. Hayter, though, countered and hit a backbreaker for a two count. Rebel tagged in. The two of them hit a bunch of elbows on Statlander, but Statlander suplexed them both by herself. Statlander tried to pin Rebel with a roll-up. Baker came in with a Meteora to break it up. Statlander caught Britt Baker with a suplex, and then Riho stood on top of Chris Statlander's shoulders. She's a tiny, tiny woman. So Riho is on her shoulders, and she's going for some kind of a move on Britt Baker. But then Rebel shields Britt Baker. Like a Secret Service agent, right? She just jumps on top of her, like someone jumping on a grenade to save their fellow soldiers. She's going to take the grenade. She's going to sacrifice herself. So she lays across Britt Baker, and Riho says, basically, fuck. She's like, Maki Ito, fuck this. And she comes off of Statlander's shoulders with a double stomp to Rebel's back. So that takes care of Rebel. Britt Baker rolls out to the floor. Ruby hits her Pele kick on Rebel to win it for her team. The right person won. You know, Ruby's got a championship match in her back pocket for a later date. And it's easy to serve up Rebel. I mean, she's the sacrificial lamb, right? I mean, she's the easy one. You put her in there, she could eat the pin, and that's her role, right? Jamie Hayter shouldn't be pinned. Britt Baker sure as hell shouldn't be pinned. That's why Rebel was in the match. Other than that, it was a match. Well, I mean, what more is there to say? Really wasn't much to it. Main event was Brian Pillman Jr., who wrestled, by the way, you know what, I have to go back. Somebody in the chat said Riho is awesome, and she is, and that reminds me, there was a move in that match where Riho, I'm trying to remember if it was a boot or a slap, No, you know what it was? It was a 619. That's what it was. She hit a 619 to Statlander, and the camera was right on it, and she kicked her right in the mouth. And even the announcers reacted like, oh, my God. So that was a stiff shot there. Riho might be small, but she is very good at what she does. And there's some things that she does where she lays her shit in. Again, she's a tiny woman. She is very small. But I like Riho. We haven't seen her in a while. I do like Riho, so I want to give her her props. The main event was Brian Pillman Jr., who wrestles MJF at the Arthur Ashe Show in a couple of weeks. So they've got to quickly put, you know, him in a position to win a few matches to really build him up before MJF, I'm assuming, beats him. If MJF lost to Chris Jericho, and then his first, you know, match after that, he loses to Brian Pillman Jr., then that's not good. They're doing some kind of a losing streak with him. Unless it's all, you know, building maybe to the split with him and Wardlow on that Arthur Ashe show, which is possible. But Brian Pillman Jr. one-on-one here against Max Caster of the Acclaimed. Caster came out, and he did his rap. There was nothing in this rap to offend anybody. Can't offend anybody. The last line of the rap, or I don't know if it was the last line or not, but he had a line in there about Skyline Chili. I keep hearing about this Skyline Chili, which I guess is a Cincinnati thing, or is it a chain? Do they have them across the country? Because before this week, and they started talking about it, I never fucking heard of Skyline Chili before. I wouldn't know how the food is. I wouldn't even know where to go find one. Is it just a Cincinnati thing? Because I feel like I've heard about it this week for the first time in my life. But he had a line in there about how Skyline Chili looks like shit. I think that might have been where Anthony Bowens cut him off. And he made a crack about, you know, come on, you're on thin ice, Max. So Pillman came out. He was wearing Cincinnati Bengals colors on his trunks in honor of his dad, who played for the Bengals before he became a pro wrestler. He ran in to attack Caster before the bell even rang. He didn't even take his jacket off. And he went right after Max Caster. He went after Max Caster the way that he should have gone after MJF on Dynamite this week. When MJF was insulting his aunt and his sister in the front row, saying horrible things about them. He called his sister ugly. He called her 16 and pregnant. And then Pillman comes out and he's smiling. Oh, look at all the hometown fans. I'm like, shouldn't this guy be charging the ring right now and double-legging this guy and beating the hell out of him? That's what he did here to Max Caster. He should have did that to MJF on Wednesday. By the way, his sister had her baby. So they were joking on Twitter that the baby, even the baby has heat with MJF. He wanted to get at MJF in the worst way, that the baby just decided, I'm done. I'm done hanging out in here. I'm ready to come out. So his sister had the baby, but then there she was sitting at ringside. So, boy, she was really committed here to supporting her brother. Right out of the hospital, just had a kid, right back in the front row, right? It's amazing how these taped shows work. So he took down Caster. After a while, he had that initial flurry. Caster took control. He got an earfall, Caster did, after a knee drop. Yes. Hebamaru in the chat says he called his mother Methany. I'm aware. He laid it in there to the Pillman family on Wednesday. I loved it. I thought it was great. That's how you get heel heat. I mean, there were people freaking out because he said, oh, your mother should have aborted. I mean, the way that some people were reacting to that promo on Wednesday, you would think the guy literally went in the ring and performed an abortion. I'm like, what is the big deal here? I mean, people need to get a grip. Holy shit. So Caster tossed Pillman out of the ring, and Bowens was working him over while Caster distracted Aubrey Edwards. She didn't see what was going on. Back in the ring, Caster charged at Pillman in the corner, and Pillman caught him with a boot. He followed that up with a flying forearm and a clothesline. Caster tried to cover up in the corner, but Pillman whipped him into the opposite corner, followed him in with a clothesline. He tried to go for some move off the top rope. Bowens distracted him, and so Pillman hit Bowens with a top rope crossbody. Caster, though, caught Pillman with a drop kick as he came back inside. Caster went for his mic drop, which is the top rope elbow that he hits. Pillman, though, moved out of the way, and Pillman went out onto the apron. He set up for his air Pillman, which is his springboard clothesline. He connected with Caster, and he got the pin. You know, it's almost like between watching this and watching John Moxley beat Minoru Suzuki in his hometown of Cincinnati on Wednesday, it's almost like not beating people in their hometown is a good idea. Actually giving them a win and giving the people something to cheer for. Who would have thought? What an amazing concept. WWE does the exact opposite 98% of the time, because in that company, it's all about heat. Always about getting heat. We're trying to. Oh, we're in so-and-so's hometown? Beat him. Look at this guy. He's all excited about being back home. The fans are really into him. Fuck him. Beat him. That's the WWE way. This week, it was nice to see some people in their hometown. Get that hometown reaction. Come across like stars. Pillman came across more like a star this week than he has at any point up to his career, in his career, so far. Now, can he sustain that? I don't know, because he's still very green. I thought he looked fine in this match, but it's not like he didn't stand out to me in this match the way that a lot of the other young guys on the rise do. Whether it's a Sammy Guevara or an MJF or a Hangman Page or Darby or any of those people, Pillman is not at their level. Now, he might get there one day, but he's not there yet. He's got the lineage. You know, he's got the look. He's in good shape. I think him and Griff Garrison could turn into a really good team, but he's still very inexperienced. So for him to be in the main event on this show was a big deal, and he got a big win here. And when the match was over, he was celebrating with his family in the front row, and Bowens jumped him. Bowens and Caster, they tried to attack him with the boombox. Caster grabbed his boombox. Out comes John Moxley, since they're in Cincinnati. So now we have the other hometown boy coming out to make the save. He hit the paradigm shift. An actual paradigm shift. That looked good. Not that double underhook shit that he's been doing. And he celebrated with Pillman, the two hometown boys, celebrating together in front of the crowd as they went off the air. So a nice little feel-good ending there. To close out the show, I thought Rampage tonight was good, but that's all I would say. It was really nothing more than just good. It was a good show. They put over the people that they wanted to put over. Hillman's having the match with MJF in a few weeks. Ruby is in line for a championship shot, so she got the win in the trios match. And they open with a really good match between Pac and Andrade. So even with the other segments in between that completely felt shoehorned into the show. And this show also suffered from the same problem I talk about sometimes on Dynamite, where they try to fit too much in and they don't give some of these segments like a chance to breathe before they just kind of go right into the next one. We had a little bit of that on this show too. But SmackDown, you want to compare the two shows, right? If that's what you want to do, SmackDown gets the easy win tonight. It's almost unfair, though, right? Because SmackDown was heavily promoted as a big show, Madison Square Garden, live. Rampage didn't have that luxury tonight. But if you must compare the two, SmackDown gets the easy thumbs up between the two of them. But I still thought we had two good wrestling shows tonight, so you can't beat that. There was nothing I saw tonight that offended me or made me angry. There's certain things you could pick apart and say, oh, they should have done this, or I wish they would have done that. That's perfectly normal. But there was nothing on either show tonight that really bothered me all that much. So a good night of wrestling, I would say. Now we have two polls that I had put up on Twitter. This is the Rampage poll. 83.7% thumbs up and about 16% thumbs down. Just shy of 1,000 votes in so far. Over on the SmackDown side, almost exactly the same rating. 84.3% thumbs up, 15.7%. Now, let me see something here. All right, so SmackDown is edging out Rampage only slightly. And I actually think that SmackDown thumbs up total is... As good as that is, I mean, 84%, I still think it's lower than it should be. I actually think that people are underrating this SmackDown show tonight. You know, when they deserve credit, you got to give them credit. You can't just be tribalist and say, I play for this team. I only have to root for this team. No, you root for the team that gives you the best show. SmackDown easily won the night tonight. I don't see how, if you watch both shows, I just find it very hard to believe that people would not have found something on that SmackDown show to actually like. That's my opinion. That's right. Nicholas in the chat says, Big Blue. Big Blue for the win. Turtlehead says, stop the steal. Quizzical One says, this tribalism shit has to stop. Oh, it's only going to get worse. I agree, but unfortunately, my friend, I think it's only going to get worse. So let's go ahead and check out your message. What did you guys think? What did you think of the shows tonight? WWE, AEW. Let's take a look and see, shall we? Let me open up your super chats here. We'll do a little super chat party. Hang out here on a Friday night and find out what you guys have to think. There are the polls again. And here are the super chats. Let's get some music going on here. If you are joining late, I want to thank you and everybody else for subbing to the channel, because tonight, I am told, we officially hit 65,000 subs. We smashed it. Like Roman Reigns said he's going to smash Finn Balor at Extreme Rules. We smashed 65K tonight, so thank you for making that possible. Put a smile on my face. Naif Al-Safar says, salute Solomonster. I will salute Naif. Thank you for the super chat. Ryan Spies with a $9.99. Can you potentially see AEW holding off on Omega against Hangman even farther than Full Gear? I'm thinking they might do another Eliminator tournament with Hangman winning this year. They could do another Eliminator tournament and still do the match at Full Gear. That's what they did last year. Although the finals of the Eliminator were at Full Gear. You know, could they? Of course they could. Look at all the names they brought in. There's plenty of people for Omega to wrestle if they want to delay things with Hangman. I think it all comes down to, when is Hangman coming back? Is he going to take a few more weeks? Is he going to take another month? Because then you don't really have a lot of time. So it all depends on when he is back. If Hangman is back in these next couple of weeks, I think you build to him challenging for the championship at Full Gear in November. If he is going to be gone for much longer than that, then I think you might want to put it off until Revolution in February. Groovy Goose, dropping $4.99. Evening, Solomonster. Have you seen Mick Foley's latest video on WWE? He pointed out the obvious, but what will it take for WWE to truly change? Not only did I see the Mick Foley video, I'm going to be talking about that on episode 721 on Sunday as well. In fact, I'm probably going to lead off with that. So you'll definitely want to tune in to hear what I have to say about that. DHV Smoking Trees. This one is for Jinx. Look at that. You even spelled it right, too. J-Y-N-X. That's how I used to spell my cat's name. I had come home. I had to come home, he said, and hug my cats after work today. I am newish, so I had never heard the story before. Yeah, I told that whole story at the end of the Dynamite stream. Kind of a sad story, but I told a story about my cat on Wednesday, so thank you, DHV. Shiesty B. Who other than Shawn Michaels do you think has the next best super kick? Also, buy or sell on the more dominant force, Nyla Rose or Nia Jax? I mean, who has the best super kick? Everybody does super kicks now. I honestly can't even tell you, because it's just such a common move now. It used to be a special move when Shawn Michaels would do it, and now it's no longer special. So the Usos do it all the time, the Young Bucks do it all the time, but honestly, everybody does. So I can't think of a single person that stands out to me as having the best superkick right now. They've bastardized the move. Nyla or Nia, I'm not really a huge fan of either, but if you put me on the spot, I have to make a choice here. I'm going with Nyla Rose. Allie, dropping $7. What's going on, Allie? Thank you for the super chat. I turned 24 years old today. Who are your least favorite wrestlers? Mine are Austin Aries, Carl Anderson, Wurtz, Fringe, Cross, and Sarah Logan. I don't wanna bash anybody here. It's okay for you to go ahead and share that, but I have to I'm gonna have to pass on singling out specific people. There are certain wrestlers who will say or do really dumb things, and I will call them out when they do. In the course of my reviews, if you just listen to the show every week, you pretty much know who I am entertained by and who I am not entertained by. I don't think I need to sit here rattling off names. If you listen to the show, it's pretty obvious the ones that I don't really care much for. Flamethrower Fluff Salisbury. And happy birthday, by the way. Happy birthday to Al. Flamethrower, love the Pillman Jr. gear. The vest has a little Hollywood Blondes, Horseman, and Heart Foundation flavor to it. It did. It does remind me of the Blondes. Powerful one. Andrade and Pac had a pretty good match. Certainly not the best they're capable of, and judging by that finish, that was probably by design. That's what I am hoping. And we will get a rematch between them in the next few weeks. The Spiral goes on. Dropping $20 here on the stream. Spiral. Happy Friday. I may be in the minority, but I think Bray Wyatt would fit in just fine in AEW. He is a generational talent and a genius who would fit anywhere. It would make me sad to see him wasted in Impact, which has 1/10 of AEW's audience. They do, but I don't see Bray Wyatt as a guy that AEW needs right now in a particular role. I think, look, if they sign him, I think he definitely brings something to the table, but I'm not clamoring to see him in AEW right away. So if he went to Impact for a while, or he went somewhere else, and eventually he came over, you know what, I'll throw out three initials that I think people aren't really talking about when it comes to where Bray Wyatt might potentially land. MLW. MLW, you know, I don't talk about them as much as I should, but MLW is making moves. And when I say making moves, I don't just mean in terms of talent, but in terms of expanding their reach, you know, content deals, TV deals. They have a very impressive roster if you look at who they have under contract there. I could see Bray going to a place like MLW for a year, 2 years, and then, you know, maybe he creates a whole new character there, and then eventually maybe he lands in AEW, or maybe he lands back in WWE. Who knows? But I don't see there being an immediate need for him to go to AEW. Doesn't mean he won't end up there, but I don't see there being a need to have him right now. Lord Cooler in the chat says that I hear about the Halloween Kills movie on Peacock. I did, and I'm very excited because now I don't have to leave the house and spend a small fortune just to go to the movies. But anyway, Spiral, thank you for the $20. JN Sermons, the AEW game will have the greatest roster ever. If they can keep up with all the changes. I don't know. I mean, I don't know when this game is due out, but the roster has been expanding so much. Are they going to be able to fit everybody in there? Dry Chicken Without Flavor, both AEW Dynamite and Rampage were overwhelming. They are still in the honeymoon period. Dynamite and Rampage were overwhelming. You mean underwhelming? Because I would not call tonight's show overwhelming. If anything, I would call it a little underwhelming. I think you may have misspoken. Unless you just have a very different opinion about tonight's show than I do. It's possible. You know, for all the people that AEW is going to have to add to their roster in the video game, imagine the WWE 2K folks. They're looking at everything that's been going on with all the people that have been cut. They're going, fuck. Look at all. You could create an entire roster out of just the people that they cut. So if they can get rid of those people in the WWE game, they'd be lucky to have 10 people left by the time they get done with that. I would not want to be working on that WWE video game. I will say that much. I would be beside myself having to make all those changes. Brock Benningfield. What's going on, Brock? Is it Uffman's birthday? I see Uffman being wished a happy birthday. If it is, hey, Happy birthday, and happy birthday again to Ali. He's joining us in the chat. Brock Benningfield, the Mark Henry segments are cool as hell, and so are you, Solomonster. Well, thank you. Virtual Gaming, thank you for the sub. Is Pillman Jr. green, or does he just not have it? He's still very inexperienced. It's what I was just talking about a few minutes ago. He's still very new to this. Now, he hasn't been doing this for very long. He hasn't been around for all that long. He's still kind of getting his feet wet, so it's an experience thing. Groovy Goose. Kudos to Al Snow. Both shows were good tonight, too. Yeah, kudos to Al Snow. He saved a young boy who was about to be pulled out in the ocean by a rip current. He spotted him in distress. He knew that the lifeguard was not going to make it over to him in time. He was on the beach, and so he dove into the ocean. And he saved the boy, and he pulled him to safety. It's a whole story about it on TMZ. Then he went over to the boy's mom, who was obviously very appreciative of saving her boy's life. And she said, oh, anything you want. I will give you anything you want. And he goes, I'll tell you what I want. And it's a bad joke. Bad joke, but good on Al Snow. You know, I saw the video where he was talking to TMZ about it. And he said the thought went through his head as this was all going on, because he felt himself being pulled under. It was very close. He could have been pulled under the current. And he said it made him think of Shad Gaspard and what happened to him. And it almost happened to Al Snow. But thankfully, everything worked out okay. Boots dropping $5. I genuinely laughed at Taz's Chavo's my friend line. And yet he didn't run in to help him. Because Taz, he knows better. He's not getting beaten up. You're not putting your hands on Taz. Taz ain't there to take bumps. Taz has a bad neck, anyway. Steve Joseph, do you still see Charlotte Flair against Tessa Blanchard headlining a WrestleMania one day? Well, I did say that a few years ago. And in light of certain things that came out, and in light of Tessa basically being completely toxic at the moment, no. I don't feel the same way that I felt back then. It does not look very likely, put it that way. Charlotte Flair and Tessa Blanchard will have a WrestleMania main event. Kyle Mayer with the $20 Super Chat. I love AEW. Bad week of TV following the juggernaut that was All Out. Taser and the tablet and the Pac and Andrade match had bad WCW vibes all over it. And Irons genuinely pissed. Who's Irons? I don't know what that means. Anyway, he says they'll do better, but that was bad. Yeah, I was not a fan of what they did for that finish at all. You know, again, the purpose it served, I guess, was to get rid of Chavo as his manager, but not a fan of that. Sean E. Dogs. They gave Finn Bray's red light. It's back. Well, it belonged to Finn before it ever belonged to the Fiend. Just remember that. He was doing the demon long before that. Kyle. Did Kyle donate twice? I think he might have, actually. Yes, he did. I don't know if he meant to, but Kyle, thank you. French fry slut. French fry slut says, Polo Monster, am I right? Hey, you like the polo? It's a little bit more formal tonight. Got to class it up here on this stream. But French Fry Slut, thank you. That might be my new favorite Super Chat name. I'm trying to see, do I like that better or Bread Heart? I don't know. But it popped me. Joseph Brooks, buy, rent, or sell? On which non-made WWE star had the best career overall? Ric Flair, WCW star, RVD, ECW star, or AJ Styles, TNA star? The best career specifically in WWE. Boy, that's a good one. You know, Ric Flair is probably at the bottom of that list because his run just wasn't I just feel like his run wasn't long. I keep thinking of his first run. As much as I enjoyed it, right? 1992 Royal Rumble and everything. RVD, though, had quite a bit of success. And AJ Styles has had far more success than I would have thought he would have. A lot of people, I think, had very low expectations if AJ were to ever go to WWE in terms of how they would treat him, especially he was already older at that point. AJ has had a hell of a run for himself, honestly, in WWE. Yeah, that's a tough one. That's actually really tough. Flair had the run when he came back with Evolution after his co-ownership angle ran out. But, and he had as good of a retirement as any wrestler has ever had, and that he blew it by going to Impact. He fucked it all up. If he would have left well enough alone after WrestleMania 24, I mean, what a hell of a retirement on Raw that next night. I might have to go with AJ Styles. I think, people are saying, oh, it's easy, it's a landslide. I don't think it's such an easy one, but I also would go with AJ Styles. I would buy on AJ. I would... I think I would buy on AJ, I would rent on Flair, and I would sell on RVD. Is probably the way I would go with it. Frankie Blyce with the 1999 Super Chat. What if they are planning to do a best of seven with Andrade and Pac culminating at Full Gear? They don't have anything else to do at the moment, and this could showcase them both for a few months. Would you like to see it? You always have to make sure if you're going to do something like that, because it can get very old, do it with the right people. Pac and Andrade doing a best of seven series, like Booker T and Benoit did back in WCW. Those two are two people who can make that work. I would love to see it. I would be fine with that. Ryan Spy is really messed up that WWE cut Zelina's tag match, all things considered. Yeah, again, I don't think there was anything malicious involved, but that sucks for her. Because this was not just a match on a show. Tonight was a special night for her. And to be just cut out of the show like that and sort of tossed aside, I'll go back and see what they did when the show was over. It would have been nice maybe to send her out there and maybe have her do something after the show, but, it sucks. I mean, that's no other way to say it. It sucks. The infamous GS, dropping 1999. I know this is off topic, but if WWE theoretically signed Conor McGregor, how do you think he should be booked? What opponent should he face? And do you think he'll be just as, if not more, successful than Ronda Rousey? I wouldn't even want to do business with the guy. I think he's nothing but bad news. I think he's a jerk. But it's all about business, I guess, right? So if they were to bring him in, I mean, how should he be booked? You got to protect him. I mean, special matches. Depends how long he's in for. Is he in for one match? Is he in for three or four matches a year? I would not have him on television every week. That's pretty much how I would use him. First feud, if I had to come up with a first person for him to get in the ring with, it would have to be somebody who can really do the heavy lifting. But someone like a Ziggler, to me, you almost want a bigger name. To be honest with you, if he wasn't doing this drip shit, I would almost say John Morrison would be good for a spot like that, because Morrison can work his ass off. And if you want him to be a babyface, he can be a babyface or he could be a heel. But if you had somebody like the old, Johnny Mundo type John Morrison in there to work with a Conor McGregor who still doesn't know a lot about pro wrestling, but he can bump his ass off for Conor and, really work with him and be somebody Conor could easily, beat for a first opponent. I think someone like Morrison would be a good fit for something like that. Temjin Zephyr just left MSG. John Cena and Drew McIntyre were in the dark matches of the evening. Crowd was red hot and had a blast. Yeah, it came across that way on TV. Crowd was hot all night. You know, you could tell when they're piping in crowd noise, and I didn't get that vibe at all tonight. You didn't have to pipe in anything tonight in that building. That building was loud as loud can be. John Falchetta, I will never get the hype around the demon. It's just vanilla midget Balor in paint. Same moves and all boring. I mean, if you're going to call Finn Balor, of all people, a vanilla midget, then it's hard to take that opinion seriously. Like, if you think the demon is dumb and it's boring, I get that. That's fine. But after the run that he had on NXT, to call Finn Balor a vanilla midget is a fucking ridiculous comment to me. I mean, come on. I thought you were smarter than that, John. Come on. Wise up. Wise up. Or go back and watch some of his NXT work, which you probably didn't see. The spiral goes on. I feel some people expect too much from Rampage. It's a one-hour show and a lousy time slot. It's the B show. If we get a good match or promos, I'm happy. In the words of Tony Khan and the people in AEW, it is not the B show. So I think we always expected it to be the B show, but I'm just going by what they told us. They said basically it's like the third hour of Dynamite. It is not meant to be a B show. So that's not true. They set the expectations for the show at a certain level. So if people are expecting more out of the show and you think people are misjudging it, blame AEW, because that's not how they positioned the show. They clearly said this is not going to be a B show. Even though we all knew that in the end it would turn out to be a B show. Groovy Goose, could the muting on Fox be the workings of the RTC? Very possible. The right to censor strikes again? Damien Cole with the $10. I'm so sick of WWE. Vince expects fans to be idiots and still watch the trash they put on. Give it 3 to 5 years and AEW will be the epitome of wrestling. And WWE will be an afterthought of a time gone by. That is from Damien Cole, who is very anti-WWE. He thinks AEW is going to take over the wrestling world and basically put WWE out of business, is what he's saying. That's what I'm getting out of that super chat. I'm going to say that Damien is going to turn out to be incorrect, though. That's just my hunch. The spiral goes on. Has Nakamura's incredible legacy been forgotten? In New Japan, he was one of the two or three greatest wrestlers in the world. In WWE, he is just a guy. Yeah, I mean, when you go to WWE, you have to expect that if you were a big star somewhere else, not a whole lot of people come to WWE and are still at that same level. Some people, you know, AJ Styles pulled it off, right? But Nakamura, the Nakamura you see now in WWE is not the same Shinsuke Nakamura from New Japan. It's like, it's two different Nakamuras. And he seems content in WWE, and he's actually getting a bit of a renewed push now, right? He's the Intercontinental Champion, and he's getting TV time. But I think to compare him to the Nakamura from New Japan, it's like two completely different people. That Nakamura doesn't exist anymore. Because the style there was different. And in WWE, it's just a whole different type of show. I don't think his legacy, though, has been forgotten. I think the people who are fans of his work are well aware of what he did, and they miss him. They miss that version of Nakamura. So he's not been forgotten. I think people are just very sad that they, you know, may never get to see that version of Nakamura again. Or at least, if they ever do, he'll be a lot older, and he might not be the same guy that he was before. KD. Wow, Moxley actually nailed an actual paradigm shift for the first time in months. I know, I was shocked. Groovy Goose. Congrats on 65,000 subscribers. Love the stream. Thank you, Groovy Goose. Thank you for being a part of that 65K. EJ Slemp. Life update for me. I found out my possible placements for student teaching, and it looks like I might be teaching at CM Punk's alma mater. What is CM Punk's alma mater? I don't even know where he went to school. But congratulations. That's awesome. That's great news. Jared M. with the $35 Super Chat drop. Look at that. Dropping a bombshell here. Baffling why WWE can't book a show like this on a consistent basis. Isn't it just mind-boggling? They have all the tools at their disposal, and they just don't do it. Food Hive, I'm still the winner with sweet Saudi money 6. Enough of this. Abhinav, my Arthur Ashe main event, KO against BD non-title, ends in a draw. Could be singles match, could be Omega against Danielson. I'm starting to think we might be getting an 8-man tag or a 10-man tag, though. Might be Brian, Christian, and Jurassic Express, or maybe Brian, Christian, Kazarian, and Jurassic Express against Omega and Cole and the Bucks. I guess that would be an 8-man tag. You leave Kazarian out of it. I mean, I'm looking at that Arthur Ashe show. We already know MJF and Brian Pillman Jr., right? And we know that there's going to probably be, like you just said, it could be a singles match with Omega and Danielson, or it could be a multi-man match. I'm also thinking, you know, we're getting Minoru Suzuki back on Dynamite this week. Him and Lance Archer. And I'm thinking that they're going to have some kind of a challenge for Jon Moxley. So it looks like my prediction on that is that it's going to be Suzuki and Archer against Moxley and Homicide. Because Homicide is wrestling Suzuki in Queens 2 days after the Queens show for GCW. And if Nick Gage can get a match on Dynamite, then why not Homicide in his hometown? If Eddie Kingston gets a rematch with Miro for the TNT title that night, he's unavailable. I could see Moxley bringing in a surprise partner. I could see it being Homicide. That's my prediction. But also, you've got the men of the year, right, with Dan Lambert. Lance Archer has unfinished business with Dan Lambert and Scorpio Sky and Ethan Page, who beat him down, and he hasn't given them a receipt yet. So it could just as easily be Archer and Suzuki as the baby faces facing Scorpio Sky and Ethan Page at that show. As long as we get to see Suzuki and they can give us the full entrance this time, I don't care who it's against. I just would like to see him back on my TV one more time. Abhinav, though, thank you. Slick Disaster 26. My thoughts, great night for wrestling. Fans got 3 hours of great wrestling content. How many times can you say that? Not too often. Unfortunately. Tuxedo T. Servo. Sad stat of the week. Caster and Pillman Jr. got more time than Moxley and Suzuki. Moxley is probably still mad. I'm still upset about that. But it looks like they're going to make up for it. I don't know if this was always the plan or not, but whether it was, I don't give a shit, really. As long as they're going to make it up to all of us and make it up to Mr. Suzuki over there, too, before he... I could just picture Suzuki going to the back. He had that bad gash over his eye. He had 7 stitches in his eye. And they showed the footage of him. I think it was one of the Japanese female wrestlers was following him in the hallway, recording him as he was walking through the hallway backstage on Wednesday. And I'm just thinking, man, he's on his way to the production truck. He's going to go crack some skulls in that production truck for cutting off his music, even with his fucking bleeding eye. EJ Slemp, who will be the Owen Hart of the Undisputed Era and stay in WWE after everyone else in the group has left? Roderick Strong or Kyle O'Reilly? Kyle O'Reilly. Yeah, I think O'Reilly is going to outlast them all. Allie, as a former fashion consultant and personal stylist, I have to ask, how important are good looks for a wrestler to be a top guy? For example, Adam Cole and Finn Balor. Look, it's a cosmetic industry. It's very important. Your appearance, your body, your size, what you're wearing, your wardrobe, how you carry yourself, You know, everything's in HD. They get close-ups of your face. I mean, you're out there wrestling your fucking underwear. So, I mean, it's pretty important. I wouldn't say it's the most important thing with everybody, but yes, it is a very important thing. Look, it's a cosmetic industry. You know, like it or not. So I would say it's very important. Duff's Vids, have a good night, my friend. John Falchette, I'm going to watch the 92 Rumble again after this. That is a great idea. I like that idea. I like the way that you think, my friend. Does the SmackDown banner is back again? Well, yeah, what do you, it's one or the other. I could put Rampage or SmackDown. I'm going back and forth here between the artwork. Jackalope Music, I hope Andrade's new manager is a beautiful young Latina whose name rhymes with Penta. I don't know what happened to her. I was of the impression that she was going to WWE, and then we haven't heard anything about Selena De La Renta. She was the one who I originally recommended in the first place to come in that role. Ben 10, thanks for all your content. It has helped me get through work for years. Ben, thank you. I'm glad that you enjoyed the show. Joseph Brooks, do you think the U.S. title is fitting and cool looking on him, like the IC title to Razor Ramon? The U.S. title is fitting and cool looking on him. I assume you mean Damian Priest. Yes. I mean, it's much better than the old U.S. belt. And it's a good fit for him, so I think it works for him. Jace in Case. Would you like to see Ring of Honor have a relationship with AEW similar to New Japan and Impact? Or does Ring of Honor still have some hate towards AEW because of All In? I don't think there's hate. AEW didn't even exist at that time. I mean, the principals of the company, the executive VPs, I mean, maybe there's some residual heat there. But do I want to see Ring of Honor work with AEW? Yeah, I want to see every company work with each other. And there's some really talented people on the Ring of Honor roster, Jonathan Gresham, and I mean, I can sit here and go through everybody on the list, but I mean, there's a lot of talented people working in that company, and I'd love to see some of them cross over and maybe have a few matches on Dynamite, or maybe have a few matches on Rampage. Moore's Sanctorum. I went to MSG tonight. SmackDown was lit. RVD 420. So Moore's had a great time at the Garden tonight. Level 20 Facto Tomb dropping $10. Say what you will about the main event of Dynamite being cut short. Eddie Kingston has to be over the moon at a chance of getting to battle Suzuki in that future tag team match. I'm not so sure he's going to be in that match. I don't think he will be. I think he's wrestling Miro again, and I think it's going to be Moxley and someone else, and that might be Homicide. That's why I pitched the idea. Bob the Builder. What did the shark say when he ate the clownfish? Answer. This tastes a little funny. All right, Bob the Builder. He thinks he's a stand-up comedian now here on the channel. I have a joke. You want to hear my joke? Monday Night Raw. EJ Slemp, CM Punk went to Lockport Township High School in my hometown. I did not go there, but we did have the same history teacher who remembers him. That's awesome. I did not know that. Off Leather Wings. I knew Suzuki was coming to the States because he has a few GCW shows later this month, but I did not expect to see him as soon as All Out. Yeah, he's working Jonathan Gresham, actually, at a GCW show out in LA, and then he's working Homicide a week later. I think it's a week from tonight, next Friday. He's working Jonathan Gresham. DHV Smokin' Trees. Is there going to be a power couple heat between Cody and Brandy and Adam Cole and Britt Baker? LOL. No, no heat, but that could be a mixed tag match at some point. Wiz Blue says, have you watched OSW Review on YouTube before? I have watched them in the past, actually, and they have a great show. They have a great product. They have great content. I know they have a lot of fans. So they do really good stuff. They've been around for a while. Check them out. OSW Review. Nick Garza, happy Friday, Sala Monster. Thanks for the stream. Well, thank you for joining. Thank you for dropping $5. Bob the Builder wants to know if I could tell the story of me on ITV. Yeah, I'll try to make it brief for the people who have never heard this story before. It is kind of funny. So this was a few years ago, and Burt Reynolds passed away. Right, the legendary Burt Reynolds, all the films, all the movies that he's been in. And so I was very sad to hear that he had passed away. I'm trying to remember what year this would have been. But in any event, I got an email from a producer over at the morning show at ITV. And it's one of the highest rated television shows, I think, in all of the UK. In fact, it might be the number one morning show. Over in the United Kingdom. But I got an email from this person who shall remain nameless. And it was an email asking if I would be willing to come on the morning show. You know, remotely, obviously. If I'd be willing to come on ITV and talk about Burt Reynolds passing away. So I'm sitting at the office. I get this email and I'm thinking, well, that's kind of odd. But also very cool. And the only thing I could think of is, you know, somebody who listens to the show, maybe is friends with a producer at ITV and said, hey, you know, I have this podcaster I listen to who talks about pro wrestling, and Burt Reynolds did once make an appearance at a WrestleMania, and so maybe they wanted to talk to me about Burt Reynolds doing some stuff in 1994 with WWE. Remember, he was at WrestleMania 10, and so that's the only thing going through my head, because otherwise it makes no sense for me to be hearing from these people about talking about Burt Reynolds. So I'm like, yeah, sure, no problem. Let's do it. Let's make it work. Actually, no, I take that back. At first I said, no, I can't make it work because of the time zone difference. I said, I'm in the States right now. But they were like, no, we'll make it work. Like, we'll make it work. I said, okay, sure. I said, when I get home, we'll set everything up, and I'm more than happy to do it. So now, like, I like Burt Reynolds and everything, and I'd seen some of his movies, but it's not like I'm a fucking Burt Reynolds biographer here. And now I'm, like, freaking out. I'm, like, going on Wikipedia. I'm trying to study his filmography and all of his different films in case I get asked about them. And, you know, it's like, I mean, it was insane what I was doing here. And I'm, like, I'm still thinking to myself, boy, it's just so strange that they would ask me to do this. So anyway, we get everything set up, and I'm in my suit. And they interview me, and, you know, they wanted to know my thoughts on him and his famous movies, and they never asked me a single question about him doing WrestleMania 10, but we talked about Burt Reynolds. Anyway, long story short, I come to find out later, and they paid me, by the way, which is nice. They paid me for the gig. But I come to find out later on that there is a movie reviewer, a British movie reviewer, by the same name. We happen to actually, that's not true, because his name is slightly different than mine, but it's very similar. We have a very similar name. And I thought it was kind of strange when we were done doing the interview, they were like, oh, you know, we didn't know that you were in the States now. And I said, yeah, I've been here for a little while. And they go, do you want us to update your address information and everything? And I said, no, that's fine. There's no need for that. But they needed to know where to send payment to me. So I gave them the information on that. But I come to find out later on that there's a movie reviewer that has a name that's almost identical to mine who talks about cinema. It's like what I do with wrestling, he does that with movies. And they got me mixed up with him. They had the wrong person on ITV, but I can sit here and tell you that I was on ITV. I was on the number one fucking morning show. I got emails from people who listen to my show who live in the UK. They said, oh, I was having breakfast. And I'm like, what the fuck? There's Sala Monster on ITV talking about Burt Reynolds. There's something I never expected. I said, well, me neither. But hey, it was a fun experience. That's right, Boogie Nights. Burt Reynolds in Boogie Nights. Yeah, he's in a lot of movies. So anyway, it's one of those just ridiculous stories, how it all worked out. But they needed a movie reviewer in a pinch, and I just happened to have the right name and didn't realize it until it was over. But boy, that could have been dangerous. I could have been anybody. I guess I was anybody. Putting me on TV like that. I mean, we did like a 5-minute interview and they used 10 seconds of me, but that's how television works. So yeah, Solid Monster made his ITV debut a few years ago. For those of you who may not have known. The spiral goes on. I think Eddie Kingston is an underrated potential opponent for CM Punk. The match might not be great, but the promos would be amazing. I agree. Eddie Kingston and CM Punk, I think, would be a lot of fun. Abhinav, how would you book Cody Rhodes rejoining the Elite? I wouldn't. I think Cody is established himself on his own. I don't really see the need for him to be part of the Elite. The Elite is bloated enough as it is. Is there really a need for Cody to rejoin the Elite? I don't get the impression he wants to go heel. So I don't see that happening. Juan Ocampo. They told me Sheiky Baby. We were in the world's most famous arena, Madison Square Gardens in New York City, where I beat that blonde jabroni. Love you. Thank you, Sheik. Quintus Brown, just got home from SmackDown. Great show. Felt good to be back inside of MSG again. Seth and Edge put on a 5-star match. Sucks that Zelina's match got cut. Yeah, I'm assuming they didn't use her at all at the end of the show. I mean, I guess what would they have done with her? Unless they just take the women's tag match and do it off the air, but they probably have to get out of that building by a certain time. Browsing in the chat, the video, I don't think the video is on YouTube. It was on their, I guess, ITV. You have to live in the UK, and I guess maybe you can access old shows. I don't even remember the date. But it's not on YouTube. It was on their own, like, platform. I don't think there's any way to access it. It was brief. I mean, you didn't miss much. It was like 10 seconds. But I got a plug for the sound off. I told them on the lower third, I want you to put Solid Monster sounds off. So I was thinking, I said, you got to plug my show if I'm going to come on. Dr. NXT Scorpio. Not sure if you talked about this. Sorry if you did. But your quick thoughts on Lashley defending the title against Orton this coming Monday. I smell a DQ finish and a rematch because why not? Well, they're going to have to do the match again at the pay-per-view. I mean, the match was supposed to be at the pay-per-view. This is not supposed to be happening on Monday. So unless it turns into a triple threat with Riddle, then they're just going to run it back again at the end of the month anyway. But they realize, oh, Monday Night Football, and so it looks like that's why they're doing the match on Monday. We were supposed to get a tag team title match on Monday. Nick Garza, if you made a Solid Monster movie, would you have Orange Cassidy as your stunt double? He said stunt devil. Did you mean to say that? Stunt devil? No, I wish he would stop impersonating me is what I would wish he would do. This guy goes around, he pretends to be me, it's ridiculous. Maybe we'll pull an ITV and Tony Khan won't notice one day. I'll sneak in and take his place on Dynamite. They might not be... Put some sunglasses on me. I'll grow a little bit of stubble. I'll wear my t-shirt and my denim. Nobody will be able to tell the difference. Maybe I'll try that. They're going to be in New York in a few weeks, right? I'm starting to get some ideas now. I might have to flesh this idea out a little bit more. Now you guys got me thinking. Jason Case just dropped $20. Creepy Jeff Hardy. Look at that freak. Creeps me out. When did you start watching New Japan on a more consistent basis? For me, it was after watching Wrestle Kingdom 9 in 2015. Before that, I would watch as many Hayabusa and Great Muta matches as I could on YouTube back in 2007. consistently. Yeah, it was probably around the same time. I mean, I could probably go back in the archives of the podcast and see. I've been doing reviews for Wrestle Kingdom pretty consistently for, God, I don't know, at least 5 years, 6 years at least. So it probably goes back to, I'm going to say around 2014, 2015, probably. Probably the same as you. That was when they were getting hot. In fact, I think one of my favorite matches of 2015 was the match that Okada had with AJ Styles at Dominion. That was fucking great. What a great match. What a great match that was. All right, so I'm all caught up now on your super chats, so thank you for that. That was a lot of fun. And I hope you guys enjoy the double review. We're not going to be doing that every week, but I thought tonight was a special event, Madison Square Garden. I'm glad I watched SmackDown. I'm glad I had the chance to talk about it because it's rare that WWE puts out a, you know, one of their weekly television shows as good and as enjoyable as that SmackDown show was tonight. I enjoyed that more than I did Rampage. Rampage was good, but SmackDown blew it out of the water. And if you did not see it, go check out Edge and Rollins, because I thought their match was every bit as good as their SummerSlam match. The stuff with Roman and Brock and Heyman at the beginning of the show I thought was great. And even the main event was a lot of fun as well. And the polls are pretty much reflecting that. This is a SmackDown poll, 84 up, 16 down. And you take a look at the AEW poll, 83 up, 17 down. So SmackDown is winning by 1% as compared to Rampage. And I actually think that should be a little bit higher, but this is your vote, not mine. So you guys go ahead and vote. And while I have you here, I know some of you are going to want me to go ahead and be the booker. We call this Be the Booker. It's a random match generator, booking the WrestleMania main event. A little bit of fun we have here at the end of each stream. Thanks to Zinfamous HD on Twitter for putting this little animated GIF together. Be the booker. Let's see what match I book. Let's see if I book a better match than WWE and AEW did tonight. We've got Drew McIntyre. Look at this. Former WWE champion Drew McIntyre. Who will Drew McIntyre be stepping into the ring with, you ask? Drew McIntyre is going to be stepping into the ring with Stone Cold Steve Austin. Interesting match. I've never even tried to fantasy book a match like that. Stone Cold Steve Austin against Drew McIntyre. Well, I'll tell you what. You know, Stone Cold Steve Austin, if anybody belongs in the WrestleMania main event, it is Stone Cold Steve Austin. So you can put almost anybody in the ring with him, and that is a guy who belongs in the WrestleMania main event. So I think I've done good this week. What do you guys think? I think I've done good. I don't know that I would put this above the Savage and Ric Flair match that I booked a few weeks ago, but this is a hell of a match here. Stone Cold in his prime against Drew McIntyre. That's right, the sword against the stunner. I like it. That's a good one. I'm proud of myself for that. Doesn't work out that way every week. All right, guys. Thank you very much for getting me to 65,000 subscribers. And thank you again to Ted Evans for becoming a channel member earlier tonight. We are closing in actually on a milestone number of members on the channel. And that means the world to me. So I thank you for that. On episode 721 on Sunday, it's going to be a packed show. There is no more This Week in History. That's pretty much gone to bed for now. But there will be no shortage of content. I am going to talk about the Mick Foley stuff. I am going to talk a lot of it. There's a lot of AEW news. We'll talk about Kevin Owens. We're going to talk about Raw. We're going to talk about NXT, the final NXT before the 2.0 relaunch, they're calling it, this coming Tuesday. And I am going to share some thoughts on 9/11 because tomorrow is the, well, today technically, is the 20-year anniversary since the attacks here in New York. I did watch the documentary that WWE did. You can find it on Peacock and the network. And I'm going to talk about that as well, so I hope you will tune in for 7:21 on Sunday. PW Hustle. What's going on? $5 here coming in from the one and only 8-track. PW Hustle, your Hall & Oates vinyl is on its way. Yes, he had gotten it. Is it Maneater? Is that what it is? Or Private Eyes? I forgot which one it was. But he got me a old vinyl record of Hall & Oates. I have a few of them downstairs. I don't think I have that one. But he came across it. He immediately thought of me, being the big Hall & Oates fan that I am. And so that was very kind of him to go ahead and send that off to me. So thank you, buddy. I appreciate that. It'll take a little while to get to me because it gets to the box first and then they alert me and then I have to pay to have them send it to me, but it'll get to me eventually. Hopefully in the condition that you sent it in, it will eventually get to me. Don Juan says, your thoughts on Orlando Jordan's run in TNA when he was doing the Velveteen Dream gimmick. I wasn't really a fan. It just felt to me like he was just trying to be controversial for the sake of being controversial. What's he doing? He's going out there pouring milk all over himself. I wasn't a fan. Don Juan, thank you, man. I appreciate that. Private Eyes. Okay, he says it was Private Eyes. Private Eyes is one of my favorite Hall & Oates songs. I don't know where it would rank. Out of Touch is the best. But I love, you know, Out of Touch, Say It Isn't So, Private Eyes, Maneater, Adult Education. There's a lot of them. Rich Girl. There's so many. Bret Hart says that was a Lady Gaga knockoff. You may be right. You know what? That whole gimmick may have just been a Lady Gaga knockoff. That was around that time that she was really hot. Like on the radio. All right, I'm going to let you guys go. It's getting late. Thank you for tuning in for the SmackDown Rampage Super Stream 7/21 on Sunday and back here live next Wednesday for AEW Dynamite in Newark, New Jersey next week for Dynamite. I will be here in New York. I will not be in Newark, but I'll be in New York. So until then, be well, stay safe, have yourselves a fantastic weekend, and I will see you for the sound off as always each and every Sunday. Until then, take care, brush your hair. I'll see you guys on Sunday.